Yo, this is P-Town's finest, representing the NEP,
D. Stoudemire,
and y'all know what we talking about.
No one's ready to deal with us.
This is the hardcore crazy stuff, yo.
Hey, this is CJ McCollum, and you're listening to the Rip City Report with my friend, my hairless friend, Casey Holdall, and Joe Freeman.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to another edition of the Rip City Report. I'm Joe Freeman, the Oregonian. He's Casey Holdall of Trailblazers.com.
Greetings, everybody, and greetings, Joe.
What's up, man?
Happy salutations. 2018 NBA Draft. Not much is up, Joe. Just chilling.
Yeah?
Kicking it. Doing a little work.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, you're bringing work for the fine listeners of the Rip City Report right now.
This isn't work at all, Joe. This is fun.
Fun
this
times?
This is the good part of the job.
Did you enjoy your trip to the beach?
I did, yeah. I wish it would have been longer. We should have gone 10 days vacation rather than 7. I'm kicking myself. But, I mean, the other part is it's hard to take time off during this time of year. And we'll be in Las Vegas for a while as well, which is vacation for my wife. No, it's not vacation for me. So.
Yeah.
So there's that. But no, it was great. Oregon coast is always fantastic. It would have been nice if the weather was a little bit nicer. It, of course, as is any Oregonian knows, whenever you go to the beach, it's usually pretty crappy. Whenever you're leaving the beach, it turns nice.
Yep.
So, you know, typical standard there. But as Oregonians as well, we're more than capable of handling the conditions. So, no, we had a great time. Dog had fun. Waldport's nice. Well, actually, nice probably isn't the right word for it. I like Waldport. nice is probably a bit of a... No offense to my Waldport people, but they know where they live at. So.
Nice.
But yeah, that's it, Joe. How about you? How's the how's Casa de Freeman with the
it's a new baby. Yeah, Clementine's doing well. She's a pretty chill little baby, so that's good. We're lucky there because Finley, who's now 3, is definitely a three-nager. She's
sure.
A little monster.
Three-nager. How about that?
Yeah.
All these little...
But it's good.
Little words and phrases you parents have.
Pick up, yeah. Currently, really feeling the full age of 41 years old. Played basketball last night. I'm wearing it. And we just got smoked. Just absolutely smoked. The team... When teams are created, and we create the teams, it's not like we shoot to see
sure,
who goes.
Sure.
Like, they're created... It seemed pretty evenly matched to me. Boy, we just got every single player on the opposing team was slaying last night. I mean, we just obliterated. It wasn't pretty.
Yeah, we went on a couple hikes when we were at the beach, and one of the hikes we did, it was actually just a couple of hikes stitched together at Cape Perpetua, which if you've never been there, which I had not been there, even though I'd lived in Oregon almost my entire life, it's phenomenal. It's a great place to go. It's a little far south, but it's beautiful. And yeah, we probably went like 5 or 6 miles total, which usually for me is nothing. Yeah, I was sore. And I think part of it is, you know, the first... Like, when was the last time you played, Joe?
Well, I play every week.
You play... Oh, well, I guess like I was trying to chalk it up to maybe kind of... Because for me, I know I need to kind of work myself into it.
Oh, sure.
I mean, because, you know, 10, 15-mile hikes, you know, are not easy, but
no.
You know, I do them fairly regularly. But, man, 6 miles and not particularly rugged terrain, I was...
You're feeling it?
I was spent, yeah.
Yeah, I keep telling myself that it's a bad idea to play basketball hardcore once a week for 2 hours and then more or less imbibe the rest of the week.
Yeah.
I feel like I should mix in some other healthy activities.
Sure.
But it's weird. It just never happens.
Maybe just some stretching, you know?
Oh, like I've been stretching, yeah.
I'm not talking about before you play.
Like every day. Yeah.
Like stretch like you were going to play, but then...
Yeah, just that's a good idea. My wife and I have been going on a lot of walks lately with the little one, too, so... Anyway, yeah, I'm old is the point of...
You look great, Joe.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So do you, Casey. And he is Casey. You can follow him on Twitter at Seahold and read his stuff at blazers.com/forwardcenter. You can follow me on Twitter at Blazer Freeman and read mine and my colleagues' stuff at OregonLive.com/blazers. And please, if you subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review. It's good for the podcast, and it boosts our ego, which is all that really matters anyway. And
how can you boost something? Or anything that's at almost zero is going to be a boost, Joe.
There you go. See? Yeah. So, let us know what you think about the show, preferably.
Please.
In positive terms. Anyway, we're going to talk, obviously, about the draft. The NBA draft is tomorrow. Got your questions. Real draft-heavy show, basically, because we're the day before the draft, and we want to give you 24 hours of preview for your Blazers draft. Before we get into that, though, let's quickly get into the news and notes. Again, the NBA draft is Thursday, starts at 4 p.m. It's on ESPN, so you know, if you choose to tune in to the old the mothership, the network. Blazers own one pick in the draft, of course, number 24 overall. The Blazers held their last pre-draft workout on Tuesday, featuring six players. Overall, they hosted 30 prospects during five different workouts. And then finally, the NBA released the Summer League schedule last week. Blazers will play at least five games in the annual exhibition tournament in Las Vegas. First up Saturday, July 7th against the Utah Jazz. Then they'll also play two more games in the preliminary round, July 8th against the Hawks, and then July 10th against the Spurs. And then, of course, after all that, they seed the tournament, and then they're guaranteed to play at least two more games, depending upon how far they go in the tournament. And then before we get knee-deep in draft hubbub, we want to remind you about our good friends at Tough Luck. They have an awesome event coming up tomorrow, coincidentally timed with the draft. Yeah, it's another one of their Yo PDX Hops events, Thursday, June 21st at Pay Dirt. So this actually isn't at Tough Luck. They have three bars. They're all excellent, so check out Pay Dirt. It's a good spot. It's in the Zipper building on Sandy. Great spot. I've been going there since it's open. It's about, I want to say it's like 3 years old now, maybe?
Two or three, I think, yeah.
Coincided with my move slightly away from Old Gold, which I used to be closer to, which I used to go to more now, and then I started going to Pay Dirt more. But anyway, they're going to have rare beer from Breakside Brewing and Von Ebert Brewing, and that's the new brewer from the former Fathead spot with the head brewer at the Old Commons. There's going to be prizes, old school hip-hop all night long. That event starts at 5 p.m., so you can get there a little early if you'd like, maybe have some dinner, watch the draft, which starts at 4, and then slide into the old Yo PDX Hops with some old school hip-hop.
There you go. That's a plan, Joe.
All right. So, the NBA draft. Let me start off by saying I know that the Blazers fans love the NBA draft. We've talked about this several times on the podcast. It's the idea of the new, of the unknown, of the what could be, you know, a fresh start, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, this franchise has been resurrected multiple times over the years with some pretty solid draft picks. I mean, you go back to Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge, that draft really set the tone for years. Damian Lillard obviously jump-started the newest iteration of this team. But I'm not feeling it this year. Yeah. I don't think Blazers fans are feeling it. I feel it's, I don't know if boring's the right word. Disinteresting is the right word, but I'm not feeling that there's a lot of, I don't know, there's not a lot of hype around it right now for this.
Yeah, I completely agree, Joe. You know, in years past, I feel like there's been a lot of buzz and interest and as you mentioned, excitement about the draft. And this year, it just doesn't feel like there's as much there. And I mean, maybe we're not paying as close enough attention as we should, but I feel like for the most part, we get fairly consistent feedback from people about what they want to see and what they're interested in. And yeah, there just does not seem to be the same kind of feeling in going into this draft that I feel like there usually is. And I think part of it might be because I just think in general, people are a bit pessimistic about the team right now. And the draft is kind of like a, you know, it's a exercise in optimism. You know, like you're looking at players and you're hoping that these guys who, for many of us, have watched play very little amounts of basketball, and you're hoping they're going to come in and change the fortunes of your fandom, basically, by, you know, being a player that can shift the fortunes of a franchise. And I just don't feel like Blazer fans are very, very optimistic about that right now. And granted, when you're picking at 24, the assumption is that you're shooting for a rotation starter, not any kind of player who's going to change again the fortunes of your franchise. But even then, like, it just doesn't seem like there's that excitement from Blazer fans to be like, yeah, this is the guy we really need who's going to help us. And I think part of that is because the team has talked about, or particularly Neil O'Shea in his comments leading up to the draft, about veterans and how they need to add veterans for the playoffs, and they haven't really talked a whole lot about the draft. Not that they talk a whole lot, period, but there's been very little discussion about who they might take in the draft, and a lot more about how they're going to improve the team, and that doesn't really seem to be through the draft, or at least not right now.
Yeah, having pick number 24 is such a weird spot to be. You know, you're obviously out of the lottery where most of the difference makers are selected, and so close to the end, you know, so close to the end of the first round that it's like, you know, is it worth using that pick to get a player that, you know, might not pan out. I think percentage wise, it just doesn't pan out. Now, of course, there are always exceptions. I mean, Draymond Green was a second round pick. I mean, that's all you need to know.
Sure.
So, of course, the
Blazers do have a history of success in the 24th pick. I mean, you got Terry Porter, you got Arvidas. I mean, Shabazz was a 24th pick. I mean, there have been good players. 24. Kyle Lowry was 24.
Yeah. They've had good picks in the second round too.
Yeah.
Will Barton, Alan Crabb, Pat Connaughton. I mean, those are good picks they've had down there too. So you can find good players. It's just such a weird spot, and it's there's just not the buzz that comes along with it. And I think, you know, piggybacking, I agree with what you said. I think it's a lot of just not only the way the season ended, but it's a team that feels stuck. And I think fans feel stuck because you've got this roster with this enormous collection of salaries, and you don't see the possibility of improvement being a very easily attained. And so it's this more or less the same collection of players for the last 3 years. I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a lot of changeover, not a lot of fresh blood. I kind of think in professional sports, you know, stability is incredible, and you definitely want as much stability as possible. But there's also a fine line of being able to interject a little new blood from a fan's perspective to have someone new to cheer for, but also, you know, to stimulate a little life and a little, I don't know, newness and freshness to your roster. But the combination, the way things ended, just feeling stuck and feeling like, you know, it's the team that is just not it. It's the collection of guys that is missing X or missing Y. And because of their salaries, you feel like you can't improve the team. And so I think it with such a low draft pick, one pick, and this feeling of not really being able to do anything, I think it's kind of stimulated this kind of lack of interest. But that said, I think that you can do stuff. I think that notion is wrong. I was actually looking up something earlier this morning and somehow or another stumbled upon... I did this mock draft with the Boston Globe.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that in a little bit too. But and it was... it was 2 years ago, and I selected Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. It was the same, almost identical scenario. The Blazers had the number 23 pick only in that draft, and no second-round pick. And something I had documented in there was that it felt like there was it was kind of lacking buzz. I can't remember exactly. There wasn't a lot of anticipation or something for that draft. Well, they ended up trading that pick for Mason Plumlee. Mm-hmm. So they ended up acquiring a veteran starter for a draft pick. So, and I think that's what they want to do now, or what they should be looking to do now. So, a long-winded story to say that I think that there is something you can do to make the team better if you're creative and if you pounce on the right situation.
Absolutely. And I agree in that they also added, I mean, they added two young players last year in Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan. And they're one of the youngest teams in the league. So, I mean, it's not like it's the salary piece that feels like it's set in stone. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that kind of depresses fans' enthusiasm for the future going forward. But I agree, Joe. I think there are moves that can be made, hopefully. And I'm not saying I know the moves, but I think there are options that will become available. Are they going to be things that really excite people? I'm guessing probably not. But I think they do need to start kind of building up to getting better. And I think one of the ways to do that is to use what liquid assets they do have and turning those into verifiable talent. And I think that's what they're going to try to do. And I think, I mean, I don't think they've been particularly shy about saying that as well, that, you know, that their plan is to go out and get a vet and they're going to use what they have to do it. And the pick is one of the few things they have.
Yeah. And this is the second young. Well, we can get into that later. We're going to talk about what we think they're going to do with the draft, the most likely scenarios this plays out. Before we get into that, though, we do want to let's just pretend in this universe we're living in that the Blazers are going to keep the pick, that they're going to end up. Things go status quo. Maybe they try to make a trade. They try to move up. They try to acquire a veteran. Who knows? Doesn't work out. They end up picking 24. You know, who do they pick in this world? And so we thought we'd kick off with, again, The Boston Globe for the last 4 years has orchestrated this mock draft in which they solicit writers from across the country, one in each market, to make a pick live style as if we were in kind of in a war room and drafting for these teams. And then they just play it out and then they publish and all that. And I'll post it on OregonLive.com/Blazers later today. I haven't gotten around to it yet. So I ended up picking 24. There's no trades in this draft, of course, so that plays out. All the guys that I had wanted to select, you know, my top four or five, actually were chosen. They okay. went they went before guys that I thought in the range that the Blazers might target, that they brought in for a workout or someone been linked to one way or the other. For the most part, the guys that I liked best were gone. So I ended up selecting Khyri Thomas, a guard out of Creighton. And this is what I wrote for my little synopsis. I said, I think the Blazers should and will actively shop the pick in pursuit of a veteran to help now, but trades are off the table in this mock. And while Anfernee Simons intrigues the Blazers, I'm going with Thomas, an excellent defender and shooter who would add depth on the wing. Thomas, two-time defensive player of the year in the Big East, 41 career three-point shooter. That's that 3-and-D guy that it seems like they're looking for. And I guess in before we get to our breakdown, generically speaking, doesn't it seem like they're looking for, you know, kind of versatility and wing help,
yeah,
and defense and that 3-and-D guy? I mean, if they can find that 3-and-D guy, isn't that one of the biggest holes that you think this
absolutely
team's
looking? And it does bring up an interesting question in that if there is a guy that they like who's available at 24, I mean, who knows? Maybe they don't look to trade as much if they're able to get a guy who they think can be a long term answer on the wing. And I mean, Joe, on one hand, it's probably foolish to try to extrapolate too much out of kind of which players go to where for which workouts, because there's a lot that goes into it that is somewhat out of the team's control, somewhat even out of the player's control. So, you know, sometimes I think we maybe get a little too far ahead of ourselves kind of making those distinctions. But when something is when they bring in basically the same exact kind of guy for every single one of these workouts, I mean, you have to assume that that's kind of where their interest is at. And again, part of that is because those are the guys that are probably projected to be available in that slot. Mm-hmm. But when you bring in guys who are all, you know, guards, who are combo guards, who have length, particularly wingspan, who are also at least decent three-point shooters, who definitely aren't kind of star players, who aren't bucket getters necessarily, but are guys who you feel like you can plug in as guys on the wing who can defend and who can hit the open three, which is the things Blazers need, then I think you can say somewhat definitively that this is where they're interested in going. And you also have the other portion of that, which is that if you've watched the Blazers play basketball for the last two seasons, you know that while they have improved defensively, they still need to improve on the wing, and they still need to have guys who can hit open three-pointers because they don't have a whole lot of knockdown guys since Allen Crabbe was traded. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what you look for is 3-and-D, and again, is there going to be a player of a caliber to where they're going to feel like it's not taking that player is better than a trade? I mean, I guess we'll see, but I think that is kind of what they're up against.
So should we – I'm trying to think of how to – I guess I could give my kind of handful of guys that if I were at 24, you know, five or six guys that I would want to target.
Yeah, how about you do
Blazers?
That, and then if they're one of my guys, we can just talk about them.
Okay.
Joe and I both picked five guys who we feel like – between the guys who come to work out and the guys who are kind of in their range who we feel like might be the most likely players to get selected, or the players that we like at least.
Mm-hmm.
So we can just talk about that a little bit.
The one guy that I don't have on my list that I wonder if I should, which is weird because I haven't even gotten to my list. I'll get to the list first, actually. But I'm wondering if he should be on the list. It's just that I don't think he's going to be, and that's what's weird is like Chandler Hutchinson. Like, he seems like a guy who's blown up. We talked about him in the last podcast.
We did, yeah.
And it seems like he's been going, and most people project him to go higher, but that's how all these
guys
are.
But just today, I saw that he was going as low as the Nets.
Ah.
And I think that was ESPN's draft, and I think the assumption was that the Nets were the team that has given him the promise. So,
well, let me start off with Jacob Evans. He's... you know, at or near the top of my list. He's a 6'6" kind of guard, forward, wing from Cincinnati. you know, got better as his career went on, an athletic guy. I think he's got to get a little bit better with his shooting. I'm not sure what he shot from three-point range. I don't have that in front of me. I probably could look it up while
I'll get it for you, Joe.
Okay. But here are his strengths per the NBA draft guide. Has good size and athleticism to go with a versatile skill set. Capable three-point shooter with compact stroke. Likes to attack closeouts and is an aggressive straight-line driver in the open floor. Has the tools to be a superb defender. But has kind of the makeup of everything that you want in a guy that has a lot of upside, has a lot of ability to, I think, still improve. And so he's kind of, you know, at or near the top of my list. Troy Brown, another guy from Oregon.
Yeah.
He's up there near the top of my list. Most fans who are Ducks fans obviously know about him. Kind of underwhelmed his only year in college with the Ducks. But was one of the better, if not top 10, one of the top 15 prep players in his class. Really good size, really good length, versatile. Everybody says he's a very smart and unselfish basketball player, capable defender. His shot was something that underwhelmed at Oregon. It was not as good as it was expected to be, his long-range shot. So I think that would be something he'd have to improve. But a really good ball handler for his size. He was a point guard until his senior year of college. And he's 6'7", 215 pounds. So he's a big wing.
He's probably
also
the biggest, at least lengthwise, of all of those kind of guys in that area, which I think is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
The Blazers are able to. If he lasts that long. I think he might be another guy, too, that might be going.
Totally. And so that's part of the problem with doing this is, you know, we don't know how the guard is going to play out, obviously. But, you know, he's certainly on there. I'm trying to find my write-up for Melvin Frazier, and I'm struggling to find it. He's a guy on my list. He's one of the slyer, you know, athletes on the list. Some people view him as, I don't know other way to say it besides one of the more underrated athletes, I guess, is one way to put it. You know, again, fits what the Blazers are looking for. His defense is really lauded. He's kind of played at Tulane, so kind of has that small school chip on his shoulder. He would have a lot of athleticism to the team. He's on my list. And then a couple more. Kyrie Thomas, the guy that I selected in the mock draft, he brings the shooting and defense that the Blazers covet. And then Dante DiVincenzo, the championship game hero from Villanova. I think he's supposed to go higher than the Blazers are picking,
too.
But he brings a lot of what they're looking for, too. And then just one more addendum to this. That's my five, but I've got one guy that I didn't mention, and that's Anfernee Simons. So the Blazers brought this. He's a 19-year-old kid from Florida who didn't play in college. Undoubtedly, you read either what I wrote or did you write about him?
I wrote a little blurbs, yeah.
And he has a unique story. He went to he went to the IMG Academy for a year, reclassified schools. We might have talked about him last time on the podcast. Blazers, he's the only one of the 30 prospects the Blazers brought back for a second workout because they liked him that much. The reason I didn't include him here is because, and this is just my opinion, I think the Blazers think that if they can maybe buy a pick in the second round,
yeah,
maybe to target him as a prospect, and then it's a lesser salary, and you still can kind of control how long you have him. Just my hunch, because he doesn't seem like a guy that's with so much unknown and mystery about him that you want to select at 24, unless you're really that high on him.
And I guess that does that kind of goes to what you're looking for out of a 24 pick too. I think there's some people that would say, well, at 24, you should just try to find a guy you feel like is going to be a rotational player for you. And I think there's some other people who would say you might as well shoot the moon at 24. And if it's a guy who you think has a high ceiling, who you think could be a really good player, but he might not get anywhere close to that, then you do that. So I mean, it definitely depends on kind of where you're at and what your franchise's ethos is in terms of kind of late first round picks. And I think the Blazers might go either way.
Yeah.
But I agree that he, it seems like a bit of a reach at 24, but also a guy too that I could see them trying to do something to get a second round pick. Maybe, you know, if they're able to pull off a trade, it includes a second round pick, and those are kind of the guys they're looking at. So yeah, a lot of overlap with my list as well. I had Jacob Evans and Josh Okogie is kind of my 1-2. Evans too, like I just got a good sense from him in his workout too.
Yeah.
Like he had a good affect about himself. He from a physical perspective, I think one of the bigger players that we saw come through Portland, at least one of the and at 6'6", I think he's, you know, a lot of these guys are kind of 6'4", 6'5", and granted, the NBA is going smaller, and I think those guys can defend small forwards, but at a certain point, like, you're putting some faith in that as well, I think. So those are kind of the two guys I have, both decent three-point shooters. To answer your question, Jacob Evans shot 37% from three on 4.5 attempts in his final season at Cincinnati. So he takes a lot of shots, and he's taken 4 three-pointers a game all 3 seasons.
Yeah, actually, and he shot 42% as a sophomore.
There you go. So he's not like So it's not like he's like a guy who you're going to have to get in and kind of teach him how to shoot three-pointers and also add to kind of defensive end. He's already there, which, again, I don't think he's probably going to be available at 24, but he's kind of the guy for me. Josh Okogie, I feel like kind of the same idea. It's just the fact that he's 6'3", you know? Like, if you're bringing in a guy who you're hoping is going to be able to work on the wing, and granted, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a small forward, but a guy...
Is he 6'3 or 6'4"? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, either way. I think since we're on the topic of it, the final workout was
the kid from Bosnia.
Exactly. Do you know how to pronounce his first name? It sounds like Jason with a D is how I...
Jason?
Yeah, Musa. Anyways, when we walked in, I think every single person that was in that workout was like, that guy's 6'9"?
Yeah.
Like, dude, he's not 6'9".
And then in the draft guide, it said 6'8", so he had already been reduced. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then I don't think he's 6'8" either, though. I think he's more like 6'6". No, yeah. But anyway.
Anyways, so, I mean, I'm saying that because some of these measurements are BS, but, you know, it wouldn't hurt to get a guy with a little more length. My third guy I have is against Troy Brown, again, because he's the guy who I feel like he probably has the most room to grow of the guys that are in that group. And I think his measurables, at least in terms of what the Blazers need, are probably the best of the guys that are going to be in that group. I have Khyri Thomas as well, a guy who I think you've written a little bit about, Joe. Better defender than I was. And granted, I don't watch hardly any college basketball, so a lot of this for me is playing catch up. But I mean, a guy who shoots threes and is a 2-time defensive Big East Defensive Player of the Year, like that's no joke. That's not nothing. Yeah, and exactly. And again, probably a little undersized for the NBA 3, but is he? You know, I mean, I think you also, at this point, you need to be projecting out for 2 or 3 years and how teams are going to be playing in 2 and 3 years when you're talking about these things. And, you know, I don't think these measurables are as important as they have been, but I still think there's something you have to think of. And I also have Dante DiVincenzo as my fifth. I think he's going to be a decent little player, but...
Risk.
Yeah, I just don't know that. And again, like, none of these guys are really providing what the Trailblazers need right now, which I feel like is the issue. If you have, I mean, I don't think the whole you have to get better right now or Damian is pissed off thing is as big of an issue as some people might think it is, but it's not nothing. And so I think you have to, it's that balance of do we bring another rookie and is that going to make us better? Is that going to piss off guys on the roster? Or do we really try to get a veteran guy? And you have to weigh those things, you know? And I think it basically comes down to when you're ready to make your pick, is there someone there who you feel like is worth it, has a ability to be a much better player in the future than they are now, and maybe more so than someone you would be trading for? So it's really I feel like this draft, maybe more than any draft since Neil O'Shea has taken over, has the capability of going a lot of different ways. And I think it's probably harder to prepare for because I just think there's a lot of variables in terms of the assets the Blazers have, which are not many, and what they need to get accomplished, which is considerable.
Yeah, plus the draft and the nature of this draft, there's a lot of chatter about there being a lot of trades and particularly high up in the draft.
Sure.
And then you reach a couple of junctures in the draft, most notably that affect the Blazers, 12 and 13 with the Clippers having those back-to-back picks. And then it's once the unknown of those picks becomes known, then the draft could shift in a lot of different ways at that point, too. So you have to factor that in as well, which, you know, I guess kind of leads us to our next kind of subject, or is just, you know, what are the most likely scenarios that we think, you know, how we think this draft might play out? And I think we both agree. Let's do like this.
Yeah.
There's 3 scenarios. The Blazers trade out of the draft to acquire a veteran, or just trade out of the draft altogether.
Sure.
They keep the number 24 pick, use it and keep it. They trade the number 24 pick to move up in the draft to target someone that they think is maybe a Donovan Mitchell that slips to 8 to 10 range, a Kyle Kuzma that slips and that they've scouted and that they think actually can come in and be a rotation player. And so I think those are the main scenarios, right? I mean, I guess the other scenario is the draft and stash route. You know, I don't know if we keep that, if we factor that into Blazers keep the number 24 pick and use it, but
yeah, I don't consider that an option at
okay.
all. Basically,
I think it would be with the Musa guy. I mean, if here's my thing. I'll start it off by saying, and I think we both agree, we think the Blazers are going to trade the pick in like a Mason Plumlee kind of deal to acquire a veteran that can come in and help you now. I think Neil O'Shea has been clear in the interviews that he's done nationally on ESPN in which he said they felt they lacked experience. They felt they lacked it, especially in the playoffs, and that was one of their downfalls. After all, they're the second youngest team in the league. They have one of the highest payrolls in the league, though. And so those two factors, my opinion is, you don't want to get older when you're the second, or younger when you're the second youngest team in the league. You want to get older. And when you have such a high payroll that you've got some salaries coming out up, you know, you've got what, three restricted free agents and an unrestricted free agent, including two of those guys. Three of those guys are rotation players, depending upon how deep you want to get there. So you're going to have to use money to either retain them or replace them one way or the other. Do you really want to spend $1.5-2 million on a draft pick that really you'll be paying double when you enter the luxury tax? So that's sort of my logic. Those are the reasons that I think they're going to trade out, acquire a veteran that can help them now, fill a need now, and then at least they're paying someone who can help them now rather than paying double for someone who they're developing to help them later.
Yeah. I'll just run mine down. I think the first most likely option is, yeah, they use the pick to trade for a veteran, particularly if they're able to utilize their larger trade exception as well to bring in someone and send out a pick. And granted, that'd be you'd be taking salary back and you'd be sending someone a pick, which, you know, is 24th pick. I don't think is especially tantalizing in this draft. But it's also, you know, if another team is able to get out some salary and they're able to bring in a young player that they like, then, you know, that's got some value. So I think that's the most likely. Second, I think second most likely is they just use the pick at 24 for themselves, find a player, again, out of those five or six that might be available who are, you know, 6'5", can shoot 35% from three, and hope that player turned into a starter for them. My third most likely, I feel like, is they trade down for a future first round pick and maybe some seconds in the current draft. So if they're not able to execute a trade, if there's no one they think is particularly worth a guaranteed salary at 24, then perhaps they're able to flip it for a pick next year and maybe get a second round pick this year, wherein they can take a guy like Simons or someone else who might still be on the board without having to give them a guaranteed salary. And my fourth one is trading up and trying to get into the late lottery. I feel like that's fairly unlikely, both in terms of Portland's want to do that and other teams being willing to. I mean, 24 and what gets you to 14? You know, like I don't know necessarily what the Blazers have that even would get you there. So
unless you trade, you'd have to trade future first. You'd have to
right.
trade future
yeah,
first
there you go.
And this pick to move up to get that guy. I mean, that would be a scenario that would be good for the Blazers, but I don't know if, say, you're drafting eighth, if the 24th pick and then a future first-round pick from a team that is likely to be in the playoffs is really all that enticing.
Sure, yeah.
So, I mean,
you know. And that's why I have it as my fourth.
Well, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Because
yeah.
I think it's fairly unlikely. So, I really do think trade is what they're looking. Trade is what they're looking for. Whether or not they're actually going to be able to get one done, we'll see. Obviously, there was already one trade today in that has, you know, some salary dump implications, and that Dwight Howard was traded from
Charlotte
to
Brooklyn
for Timofey Mozgov, I think a couple
pick.
Second round picks
yeah.
and some cash. Basically, that gets Charlotte out of some luxury tax issues this year, but not going forward, since Mozgov still owed quite a bit of money. And it you know, it gives the Nets an expiring. Nets are going to be a team's going to have a lot of empty cap space here in a couple seasons, which I think they're probably looking towards. And, you know, you get another year of Dwight Howard, who, while all indications are in the locker room is that he's not especially
fun,
well thought of. But I mean, you look at his numbers past couple seasons, he's still a productive NBA player. So yeah. I mean, you know, those deals are out there, I suppose. I don't know if that particular deal would have been particularly helpful for Portland, but a deal like that, that's kind of probably, I think, what they're looking for.
I think we more or less agree. I don't think they're moving up to. I don't think that they're trading up. Again, I mean, unless you find a Donovan Mitchell, I mean, that's just the classic example, or even a Kuzma. But a Donovan Mitchell appears to be a generational, you know, talent.
Yeah.
Or that might be overstating it, but he could develop into an all-star. I mean,
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you can identify a guy that you have no doubts about it, but I think everything in the draft has doubts. So
everyone.
So it's, unless you can move up to get a guy like that, that you are so confident will become that, then I don't see A, how you can do it, and B, how it benefits you to move up. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there is the whole notion of you do need to keep having talent roll through the pipeline, sure, and all that kind of stuff. Which I understand, and I get that point of view, but I just think where the franchise is now, both in year of its rebuild and positioning off where things how things unfolded last year, where they're at salary structure wise, it just makes the most sense to go get better now and trade for a veteran to take that next step as an organization. So yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Should we get on
to the opinions of Casey and Joe about what's going to happen tomorrow night?
And now, of course, we have your questions to handle. But before we do,
we can't forget our friends at Tough Luck and at Pay Dirt and at Old Gold, especially. They're all one group and they're all fantastic establishments that you should check out. But the event tomorrow, being Thursday, UOPDX Hops is at Pay Dirt. That is the 21st, which you already know anyways, because that's the day of the draft. And you'll have Ray Burr from Brickside Brewing and Von Ebert Brewing, which is the new brewery in the former Fathead spot, with a brewer from the Commons, which is fantastic beer too. Not that it matters, because there's so many good beers being made here in Portland anyways that you're sure to get something good. But Breakside and Von Ebert, straight delicious.
Rare beer. Also,
very rare. You get prizes, old school hip hop all night long. I'm sure they will have the draft turned on. Maybe the sound won't be turned on, but I would almost imagine a television will have it. And yeah, so go 5 o'clock, enjoy some fantastic beers from Breakside and Von Ebert. And yeah.
Live that life.
Pay Dirt. Check it out.
They've got some good food around that area too. It's in the Zipper building, and there's multiple different places to eat too. So so check it out. It'll be a good time.
Sales are going to be off the church, because that sniz is straight delicious.
For sure. Okay, we'll get to your questions. As always, we solicit your questions on Twitter. For those of you who follow us, you know that. For those of you who do not, follow Casey at Seahold. Follow me at Blazer Freeman. First up, from Scott Roberts. Wouldn't CJ McCollum, for some combo of these... Okay, so this is a trade scenario. Let me redo this. Wouldn't a trade scenario with CJ McCollum and some combination of three of these four Philadelphia 76ers assets make sense for both teams? The assets are Robert Covington, Sarik, Fultz, and the number 8 pick. So three of those four for CJ. Wouldn't that make sense for both teams? Blazers would have to take back Bayless's expiring contract to balance the money. Sixers would have cap space for Paul George and LeBron James. Sixers get a super team. The Blazers get more balanced, deeper, and athletic. My response to this is that the Blazers front office has no desire to trade CJ McCollum. And I know that that's a popular narrative that people throw out there in all manners of medium, time and time and time and time and time again. Regardless of how much sense it makes to you or to me or to anybody else, the Blazers front office, last I heard, has no desire to do that. So that would be my response to the question, is the Blazers don't want to trade CJ.
My response would be the same. I would say, I mean, that sounds like a pretty fair deal for both sides if you're going to do something like that. But yeah, I mean, all indications are they have no interest in doing that. So
yeah,
there you go.
Unless there's been a drastic philosophical change in the front office.
I think you always have to, the notion of it, I think, is there. Because, I mean, how often do guys come out and do teams say, yes, we are willing to trade our second best player?
Yeah.
You know, it's fairly infrequent, but yeah, I mean, there has been zero indication whatsoever that they have any interest in doing that. I know people, and people talk about it because they feel like it's the best way to bring in more talent, but I just don't think the interest is there.
Okay, next up from Brian Gabrielson. With only 10 teams winning the title in the last 30 years, the consolidation of power at the top seems to be worse than ever. As well as new free agency trends and player movement feeding the fire, how would you create more parity in the NBA? Ooh, we're commissioner. Are we the commissioners? We would be dope commissioners, dude.
That'd be awful.
Could you imagine? No.
I'd make stupid decisions. Nothing would ever change.
There'd be change.
Yeah.
I'd have to prevent too much change. I'd have to rein some things back.
I just want to say, dude, shout out to Adam Silver. Adam Silver is so good at getting post questions and being like, yeah, we'd consider that. And then nothing ever happens with it. Like, he's like, no, we're definitely not doing that. Because then I think people are like, well, why not? And he's like, oh, yeah, we'd consider that. We'd consider that. Yeah, we'll consider getting rid of one and done. Yeah, we'd consider having a minor league system.
I'd love fire around the ring, around the basketball hoop.
Like we'd consider that. It's super smart because, like, it just makes sense to give the impression that you are open to change. I don't think the NBA is really all that open to a whole lot of change, but... doesn't hurt to give the impression.
I feel like you could immediately shoot down flaming nets. Like
Not going to be any flames. And actually, we've tried to do some pyrotechnics here in Portland. It is a detailed process. It is tough to get it taken care of unless like you are going to have it all the time. And even then, it's difficult. And they go back and forth on whether or not they even want you to do it anyways.
There's teams around the league that do it every game.
There are. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's actually one of the things. If you're going to do it, you almost have to do it every game because it's such a detailed process to get sign off. And I mean, I think it was maybe playoffs 2 years ago we were going to have it. And the fire marshal was like, no, you can't. So they had to scrap it. And they had already spent a ton of money on it, if I'm not mistaken.
Yikes.
So didn't turn out great. But back to parity in the NBA. Joe and I had a little discussion about this off air before we went on. And my personal opinion is that there's really just not a whole lot you can do about parity in the NBA because of the nature of the sport, which is that it's five players on the court on a team at a time. And one player can change the entire fortunes of a franchise, as we've seen with LeBron James.
Or even go back to Orlando to L.A. with Shaq.
Sure, yeah. I mean, and granted, where those players go, that can change. But that, to me, is not really parity. You know, it's like when Shaq went from the Magic to the Lakers, it's not like the Magic stayed a good team. You know, like he just left and they went back to being bad and another team got really good. So for me, it's just the nature of the sport in that if you have one or two players especially who are transcendent, you are always going to be great for the most part. And I don't know how you fix that necessarily by machinations of the league itself.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying and I agree to a certain point, but I do disagree at another point. The NFL has so much great parity because there are so many players that play in the game at once. And so the teams are much larger. Salaries are not guaranteed. There's just a lot more turnover and transition in that league. It's great. Fans love it. There's a team can go from worst to first. It seems much easier than any other sport. So that goes to your point. There's only five NBA players, so it's difficult. But if you have a hard salary cap, in which teams cannot exceed that salary cap under any circumstances, that would create more parity because you wouldn't have four All-Stars, odds are, on one team because you would not be able to exceed the cap. You would have the best players in the game would be more evenly spread out to the game's 30 players. Now, we live in a free market capitalist society where a hard salary cap is a hard sell and a borderline deal breaker for the Players Association. So I'm not saying I see that happening, but I think a hard salary cap would greater create parity across the league.
Yeah, I think that is one way to get it done. It feels like they're moving further and further away from that. But yeah, I guess if there was a hard cap, that would be the closest way you could get to it.
Okay, next up from Andrew Thien. Do you think the team takes a swing on a wing through the draft and free agency, or is everything riding on Mo Harkless taking another step forward? On that note, in a similar vein, Matthew Oswell asks, will the Blazers draft a small forward and finally move on from the frustration we all know as Mo Harkless? Would you like to answer this one?
Yeah,
please?
I would...
They're looking for a wing.
They need a wing. And I think there is still hope that, Mo, when can play at his best for or more consistently. I mean, like, that was basically what Mo said they told him at his exit interview was, Mo, we need the Mo that we saw for the last month and a half of the season. If that's the Mo that we can get for an entire season, we are a much better team. So I do, I think that that's still on the table. They still want that. But they need more help on the wing, period. Like, I mean, so Mo goes to the bench and say the Chief is going to stay at four. Who's your
Evan Turner.
Forward? Evan Turner. And I mean, while Evan does some things well, the things that this team needs right now are not the things that he does particularly well, which is shooting and, you know, to a lesser extent, kind of defense and rebound. Evan Turner's probably a better defensive player than we give him credit for, but still not a guy you put on the wing to try to lock someone down. So
there's two things. I do think that they're going to try to acquire a wing. I think that's their main objective.
I agree. Yes.
So in one sense, yes. And I do think that Mo Harkless is one of their more attractive trade pieces. At $10 million, his salary is perfectly suitable and fine for what he provides. He's still very young. And I think there are teams who still see how much potential he has and looks at what he did over the last month or two of the season and says, I can get him to do that all season. I think the Blazers also think that maybe they could do that. The problem is, even if the Blazers didn't think they could, is can you trade Mo for a wing? That you're trading one wing for another. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, can you trade him for the guy that would then replace him that is much better? So I think it would have to be part of a larger deal, and I don't know how that larger deal go. I mean, I guess if you know, sweeten the pot with a draft pick, obviously 24 and Mo for something like that, that could potentially get it done. It's just about finding the right fit. And but I do think, yes, I think that the team will take a swing, to answer your question, and at least try, even if it doesn't come out, that they'll try to get that player. Now, free agency, not so much, because they're not going to be major players in free agency. They don't have money to spend.
Yeah, they have.
The mid-level exception, mid-level. I think, at 5.6. I think it's what it is.
They don't, so the full mid-level is like 8.6, right?
But they don't have that. Yeah, because they'll be in the luxury tax when they have their.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my understanding, because they're going to have to do qualifying offers for their free agents,
right?
And then you know, Dame and CJ salaries are going up on and on and on. So, free agency, the only tool, as I see it, that they have is that $5.6 million mid-level. Now, they do have their trade exception, of course, which expires, I think, July 24th or 5th or something like that. But I don't know if you can use that if you're over the cap in a trade. Like, I don't... Or in, I mean excuse me, to sign a free... Oh, yeah, that doesn't work anyway.
You can't.
That's a trade exception.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Called a trade exception. So, anyway. Yeah, so I think the draft, and that's why going back to our what we think is going to happen in the draft, it's the main vehicle this team has this offseason to get better, to change something up and get better. And so that's why if there's a trade, if they go try to find that wing, something like that would happen around the draft. Anyway.
There you go.
Okay, next up from Greg. How much, if any, does Wade Baldwin's affect, excuse me, does Wade Baldwin affect Thursday's draft? I know, but he is young and a backcourt player. I still think we need help at small forward and power forward more.
None. I think Wade Baldwin has an effect in terms of free agency, and particularly in terms of whether or not the Blazers are going to bring back the guys that they have, their restricted free agent, particularly Shabazz and Pat. But I don't think there's any kind of decision making whatsoever that's impacted by Wade Baldwin being on the team.
Yeah, the I agree. The only it's Shabazz. It's do you want to bring Shabazz back, or do you use Wade Baldwin as kind of an insurance that, you know, you think he's a rotation player? So that's where that comes into play, but not so much in the draft. Next up from Pedro. Hey guys. Hey Pedro. Honestly, I understand the whole point of view that the Blazers should quote-unquote wait until the Golden State Warriors fade a little, but how long can the fans, and especially the players, the most competitive ones, put up with this? There has to be a threshold. Thank you for the podcast. Thanks for listening, Pedro.
I think everyone's sick of losing to the Warriors. I can tell you that for sure. And yeah, I think at this point, really, too, you just need to try to build the best team you can. And I do think that the last 2 years, probably, you were spinning your wheels. I think at this point you got to just go forward and hope that things time out the right way for you, because I don't think you can kind of bide your time waiting for Golden State to fall off that much longer, because they might never fall off. So you might as well just build the best team, and if nothing else, maybe, you know, they run into injuries like they look like they might have this season, and maybe you get lucky in that respect.
Yeah, I think we've been pretty steadfast, or at least I've been pretty steadfast in this for the last year or two, is that you just want to see improvement with your franchise. You want them to take that next step. And heading into the playoffs this year, you thought you had done that by winning a division championship, finishing at the third seed, getting home court advantage. And then, you know, at that time you thought, oh, you got a chance to go to the second round, but to fade in such stunning fashion, get swept out of the first round, you kind of feel like you took a step back in a lot of ways. So I think to answer your question is you want to keep taking steps forward to get to that point where when they have injuries, when they fall off, when you're poised to upset them or whatever, you're at least taking steps forward to get closer to that goal. Next up from Jacob Parks, will the Blazers add a player who cannot legally have a rye at Tough Luck Bar?
It seems almost likely that will be the case. They're, Actually, I guess there are quite a few guys in this draft that are a bit older than typical.
A lot of the guys on our list were 21 or over or close to. I'm going to say flip a coin on that. 50-50 on that, Jacob.
Evans?
I think he's a junior, so he's
Come
probably 22.
Put dude's birthdays down. Come on. Lazy SO.
Yeah, well, you can't get everything you want, I guess. Isn't it?
Jacob Evans is 21 years old.
21.
June 18th.
Drink.
So he just turned 21, actually.
He was born when I was in college. Next up from John, Messi or Ronaldo?
I used to be a Messi guy, but I think Ronaldo has overtaken him as the number one. If we're talking about who's better.
Well, it's a very it's up for debate. There's no, it just says Messi or Ronaldo. You could, is it, are you a bigger fan of them, or I interpret, well, that's how you interpret it.
I'm not a fan of either.
Okay.
Because I'm just not a fan of soccer that way, but
I would answer the question as follows: Messi. Because I went to a match at, is it Camp Nude? I don't know how to pronounce it. The football facility, historic landmark in Barcelona, and watched Messi and Ronaldo play. It was Barcelona versus Real Madrid. And Messi had two goals. Ronaldo had a goal. It was the second best sporting event I've ever been into in my life. It was incredible. And since I was in Barcelona's home venue, I would choose Messi.
There you go.
Okay, next up, the 3 a.m. tip-off wants to know, how much will who we pick in the draft give us an indication of plans for the current roster players who are vulnerable to being traded, e.g. Shabazz, Pat, Nurk, etc.? Well, those players are all free agents, so odds are it won't affect them at all because those are free agents. So, you know, unless you do a sign and trade, which you can't do at the draft anyway. But he's saying how much will the draft give an indication of that? I don't.
Probably not a whole lot. No. Would be my guess.
Yeah, I would agree with
because
that.
Because the draft, too, you're also reacting to what other teams are doing. So part of it is what you want to do, but another part of it is obviously what other teams are interested in doing with you.
Next up from Kay the Classic. Hey, guys, love the show. Thanks, Kay.
Hey.
I was just wondering, have you guys seen leaked pictures of the Dame 5, and what do you think?
I have seen leaked pictures of the Dame 5, and, you know, they look about the same as leaked pictures always look, which is kind of weird, incomplete, and anytime you take a picture of a shoe without a foot in it, it's always going to look kind of weird. But, yeah, I would say it doesn't look as good as the Dame 4, which is a hell of a shoe. I'll say that.
Yeah, what I saw I didn't like, but also I know that it's probably not a finished product,
yeah.
So I'll only judge it on the finished product. And I agree, the Dame 4 was a good looking shoe.
And I think when I saw the 4, it looked bad too initially. The 3 was bad, so I'll give you that.
Okay, next up from Aaron Fulweiler. Do you think the franchise sees Zach Collins as the future starting 5 or future starting 4? My answer to that is it doesn't matter. The league, as we've heard so many prospects come through, and with what the Golden State Warriors are doing, and to a certain degree what Houston did, is it's more and more a positionless league.
Yeah.
When you have Draymond Green playing center at 6'5" or 6 or whatever he is, how tall is he? I think he's 6 foot. Yeah, well,
I think he's at 6'7".
Maybe
6'7".
Yeah. that doesn't matter anymore. And the whole league is going small. If anything, you don't want to be a branded a five, because that's becoming a dinosaur spot in this league. So he's a big is what he is. And in a lot of ways, he fits well into what that league is going to become, because he can play the four and the five and seemingly poised to do it pretty well. So that's my answer to your question. I don't know if I answered it, but. Casey?
Yep.
That's it?
Yep.
Charlie Cannon wants to know, Evan Turner and the 24 pick for Nick. Who says no? I think Nick, spelled N-I-K, but I think Nick in this scenario is Nicholas Batum.
Yeah, I would have to assume that that's what they mean.
I'd do that trade.
Yeah.
Nick and 24 for Evan Turner. Would add a lot of salary, but I don't know if the franchise has a lot of desire to bring Nicholas back, but... I would
do it. They're
going
to have to add salary. You know, like, they want to get better, they're going to have to pay tax.
True.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said they don't really care. But yeah. Okay, next up from Ty Forshi, do you think the Blazers could get more value in this draft trading down for 30 and 34?
I mean, it's a possibility. When you get to around 24, 25, that does seem to be about where you kind of have to make the decision regarding whether it's worth having a guy in a guaranteed salary that you feel like you might be able to get in the second round with a non-guaranteed salary, at least not guaranteed for as long. So it comes down to your scouting, I guess. I mean, if you feel like there's a guy who's undervalued by other teams that you feel pretty strongly is going to be available in the second round, yes, that's the better option empirically. But it's also a risk, because if you're banking on a guy being there, you make that trade. Now, granted, a lot of times these trades happen after the picks are already made. So that does kind of take away a little bit of the risk factor. But there is something to be said about trying to get further back in the draft, which is crazy, because it was like 5 years ago, it was all about first round picks. And mm-hmm. now like teams have figured out, oh, well, if I'm going to be locked into this guy for 4 years, which we've also seen teams are not as willing to just keep extending out players on rookie deals as we saw with a guy like Wade Baldwin. So, I mean, that's changing a little bit in that you're not necessarily, if you're taking a guy at 24 and you have him for two seasons and you really don't think he's going to pan out, you don't necessarily extend that like you used to, but it's also still guaranteed salary. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely something to consider. I would actually put getting a second round pick as one of my more likely scenarios in this draft, too. I feel like the Blazer team likes to do that. I think a lot of the guys that had it on workouts were guys that they might be able to get late in the second round or early in the second round. So I could definitely see that. I'd be a little surprised if they move 24 for second round picks, period, but I definitely see the interest in getting a second round pick.
I don't know that you need two second round picks.
Yeah, two is probably a little too
many.
That's
where I take. Yeah, I think you would, if there's a guy you've targeted at well, actually 30 is the last pick of the first round, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess 34 would be more attractive there. Look, if they are really and apparently they are intrigued by Anfernee Simons, and if so. And you think you can get him at 34, you can develop him for 3 years at a reasonable salary, you control, you know, his rights, trade down and do that.
Sure.
Yeah. I would think that's some value there.
Absolutely.
And, I you know, going back to our, what we think might happen in this draft, I agree with you. I think trading for a second round pick might be, you know, if things fall apart there, they can't get the veteran they want, that might be something they look to do. Okay, next up from Grant Feltz. Aside from looking a fool if deals fall through, is there upside to Neil Olshay's near obsession with controlling the media narrative during draft and draft talks? Today, trade speculation is part of being a fan, and he's robbing me of the fun. It forces me to follow more active teams. Well, if assuming you're a Blazers fan, Grant, I would think it would be more fun to have good players and a good team to root for throughout the entire season rather than ridiculous trade speculation for weeks of the season or a month or whatever it is. You could be the type of GM who's flooding the market with false trade rumors to try to do smoke screens to other teams, or you can run things tightly and not have any leaks. And I totally get that train of thought or that school of thought. I don't know why you would tip your hand in any way. It's not going to help you to let people know what it is that you want to do.
Yeah. For me, it's not, I don't feel like Neil controls the narrative at draft. They don't talk at draft, basically. So, like, they're not controlling anything. They're basically saying, we're not going to put our information out there, at least publicly. I mean, I'm assuming they're doing intel to try to figure out what other teams are doing, and I'm sure other teams are asking them. But, yeah, as far as, like, putting it out on the street, like, that just doesn't – I don't really think that has much of a benefit for anybody. And, I mean, and since, you know, to your point, Joe, so many of these things are kind of made up or at least have the – just the veneer of reality anyways, that, I mean, heck, man, make them up yourself. Like, or find other people making them up. Go on NBA Reddit. I'm sure there's some Blazer trade rumors there that don't have anything to behind them. But, I mean, if it's really just about, like, the notion of wanting to hear trades and get jazzed about the possibility of that, then, man, I mean, it doesn't matter if they're true or not. Just find some fake stuff.
Okay, next up from Belgian Blazer, are you guys watching the World Cup? I am not. I have not watched one match.
I've watched a little bit. I watch on the weekends when I am able to get up early enough to do it. I don't like to turn the TV on during the day since I work from home. I just think it's bad policy. So I'm not really watching a whole lot now unless there's a really good game that's going on or maybe it's exciting. I see people talking about it, I'll pop it on real quick. But I would if it fit into my schedule better.
Next up from Griffin Fogarty, Gary Trent in Portland Part 2. How much does Portland like Simons? I don't see Gary Trent. We talked about him a little bit last podcast. I think we did something after the first or second workout, and yes, he was a participant. He wasn't on our list today, so that says all you need to know there. And then Simons, I mean, they brought him in for two workouts. He projects to fit what they want. He's incredibly – he tested off the charts with leaping and athleticism at the combine. He's got a accurate long shot. He's got good range on his shot. He's going to need to get a ton bigger. He is a skinny 19-year-old kid with little to no legit experience. So he is the definition of a project. But judging by them bringing him back for a second workout to and particularly a workout that featured some bulky, rugged, college-tested guards that he kind of could kind of bang and collide against. That's an indication that they like him.
Agreed.
Next up from Denny Jones, is there any chance the Blazers may be interested in or have the pieces to move up and target, say, Michael Porter Jr., should he slip out of the top 10 due to his back injury?
I don't really think so. No, I don't think they have the assets to do it, and I don't think... Boy,
I'm not a Michael Porter Jr.
problem guy.
Yeah.
Is, man, I don't know
why. This is my thing about that guy in particular is why do you mortgage so much to move up to a guy who has so much risk? I don't think that's smart business.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the old high risk high reward move. I think is kind of what it is. If he follows, a lot of people think that, or some people think that, you know, he might be one of the best two or three players in the draft. So there's a value there, I suppose, that you feel like you want to get it on. But yeah, that's, I mean, the Blazers don't have a whole lot to give up. So in that regard, I guess, because they wouldn't be giving up much of anything other than their pick and maybe a player, because they just don't have many options to give away. So if that's what you're asking, sure. Do I feel like there's any inclination to get Michael Porter Jr. on this team? No, not really.
All right, well, I think that'll about do it.
Yeah.
You've got we'll get this out. It'll have a solid 24 hours of shelf life before the draft. Listen to it on your drive to work in the morning, your drive home
times today.
Yeah,
exactly.
Listen to it before you go to bed tonight. Listen to it on your bike ride to work. You got plenty of time here. Enjoy the draft. It's the fun of the unknown. Maybe there'll be a deal. Who knows? We'll find out in about 24 hours, or if you're in the future, less.
Yeah.
So, and then I think we're tentatively planning to do a podcast on Friday, a post-draft wrap-up, probably a tidier podcast. And so keep on the lookout for that. In the meantime, enjoy the draft. We'll talk to you later in the week.
Check out Pater. Go left, go right, 360 degrees. Here comes a pay, Kobe. Hippin' and he's hopping a three. Try and catch him coming down the court. Bonzi Wells, what a handle. It's amazing what he do for the sport. Damon Stoudemire saves the day, a.k.a. Mighty Mouse. Gonna show all of you scrubs how to play. What a show. Why the Lakers even want it with us, you know? No one's ready to deal with us.